I am Rachel Cohen. It is March 7th, 2023, and I'm sitting with CB Bettisworth. I would like to record this interview and, with your permission, include the recording in UAF's oral history collection at the Rasmussen Library, where it will be available to the public. Is that okay with you?
It's very okay.
Excellent.
And then I, Karen Brewster, am also here running the recording device, and who knows if I'll have a question or not.
Excellent. And I just want to encourage you to share your thoughts and memories in as much detail as possible. But since this is public record, if at any time you'd like us to stop the recording or do any of those things, just let us know. We're happy to do that.
Yeah.
Because, of course.
Yeah.
We do not edit the recordings once they're in our collection.
I was asking a question about if you'd contact the people at K2. So I would guess somewhere 4 or 5 years ago, we assembled a group of people who've been active in the Capitol Move issue, mm-hmm. including Frank, in Juneau, and we did both a TV show, and then they did a set of interviews that then became archived, and they have those interviews, and they are available
to the public.
To
them. I have looked at the paper collection at the Alaska State Library, but I was not aware there were audio recordings at KTOO, so I will.
They're actually video, too.
Video. Well, then, they will.
I think if KTOO would be video.
They will. I know people over there, so thank you, sir. That is a wonderful reference. I feel like this project keeps spiraling.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, did you say when you started that what the topic of this interview is?
Oh, yes, the topic of this interview, I don't think we did, is the Capitol Move issue in Alaska, specifically the Capitol Site Selection Committee and the Frank Initiative, which is Frustrated Responsible Alaskans Needing Knowledge.
Yes, let's be frank.
Which is perhaps my favorite acronym that I stumbled across in this entire process for a plethora of reasons.
Yeah. So, in the beginning, when Hammond was elected governor in 74, I had some really good friends from Fairbanks who were actually became part of his administration. And one of his, that was also the year, which was strange, huh? So they elected Hammond as governor and at the same time decided to move the Capitol.
Right, which is fascinating, isn't it?
It just, you know, but of course, prior to that, oil had been discovered, we were building a pipeline, mm-hmm. everybody had the idea there was going to be just a ton of money hanging around and what the heck are we going to do with it? And so I can see how that sort of went together.
Right, yeah.
So my friends, there needed to be on the Capitol Site Selection Committee representatives from each of the four judicial districts. I, at the time, was a planner in Ketchikan. So I got appointed as one of the members from Southeast Alaska.
Yeah.
Even though my friends from Fairbanks knew that I was from Fairbanks.
So you were originally from Fairbanks?
Well, Fairbanks has been my home ever.
You were born here?
No, I was actually, my biological father was born in Flat.
Okay.
Mm. My mother was born in Enana. My grandmother on my mother's side was born in Dawson. They're all Fairbanks folks, and I got darn many relatives here.
Okay.
I used to say I could never get in trouble because somebody around is going to find out about it. So these fellas said, we know CB, he's a planner, architect, and he'd be great to be on. And I actually worked on one of the fellows' campaigns and worked on Hammond's campaign. And he said, geez, it'd be great to get CB on this commission. And so they called me up and said, are you willing to be on it? And I said, yeah. So the other person from Southeast was actually one of my really best friends anymore. It is a fellow by the name of Bill Corbis. As that process went along, being a planner, we had to develop the criteria under which it was that you were going to select a site. And so it got into being geography. You know, we were limited to being within, it couldn't be within 30 miles of Fairbanks or Anchorage. It couldn't be east of the parallel that divides Alaska from Hawaii, or from Hawaii, from Canada. And that was about it in terms of, you know, the criteria in the initiative.
Right.
So the first thing we had to do was, we had a budget, which was really cool. Department of Natural Resources was involved.
Yes.
And so and that was Guy Martin. And so he was a commissioner. They hired a fellow to be our executive director. Jimmy Chris, I don't think I can remember his name.
Rachel
Len somebody.
Has it in her little
I brought with me the summary report for
okay.
you guys.
Oh yeah, so it's in the front page.
I actually have the complete report, which is about 4 inches thick.
Jimmy Christmas.
And I have read more of it than I like to admit to most people.
So are any of those available publicly?
Oh yeah, they're all in the library.
Yeah, but I mean, can I have a copy?
You could check it out.
You could check one out. Right. I don't know that I could. We can probably get you a copy.
You should loaned it to me before the interview.
Well, this is a test.
This is a test.
Yeah,
we're testing you. Here we go. So, that's interesting. Oh, this is the wrong one. I brought the wrong one with me. This is the site planning commission.
Yeah, no.
I grabbed the one off
yeah,
my
yeah.
desk.
Yeah, no.
I should have brought the site selection commission. This is the later group. I am so
right.
sorry.
Yeah.
yeah.
They all sound so similar. It's easy
yeah.
to get them mixed up.
I can say I don't know if I should put this on the record, but I can say with confidence there's about 9 million reports as far as I can tell.
Right.
the
yeah.
Fairbanks Library, should you wish to. The editor of my article has suggested I make a sub-bar of the reports because it is very confusing.
So
right.
anyway, they hired an executive director.
Right,
whose name
and,
will
and
come
you,
to
you can
eventually.
Look him up.
I will, yes, I'm trying to remember now.
He's a good guy. He was very, very, he was a good executive director. He, mm-hmm. he knew how to get stuff done. The next thing we had to do was hire a consultant. So we put out an RFP and interviewed, we interviewed four firms. I don't know how many responded to the RFP. Additionally, we had a staff person from Department of Natural Resources. Anyway, so we hired a firm, CCCHOK. CCCHOK was Crittenden, Cassetta, Cannon. Ed Crittenden is a long-term architect in Alaska, one of my mentors, passed away, but you know, a real jewel. He'd actually been exec director of what was at the time Alaska Housing Finance Corp. At one point. So his firm, associated with the firm out of San Francisco and actually Kansas City, Helmuth Lovaata Kassabaum, HOK. What they brought to us, as opposed to the other firms, I think, was they brought staff in Alaska. The other firms weren't necessarily, well, I guess they were, but they didn't really show how those firms were really going to be as active in doing the work as mm-hmm. as Crittenden's outfit was. So then we had the firm on board, and then, you know, the recommendation is that, you know, maybe we ought to start off by having some criteria under which we're going to select a site. And it had to be 100 square miles, it had to be on state land. Anywhere between 30 miles outside of Fairbanks, 30 miles outside of Anchorage. We then developed these sets of criteria, which had to do with, you know, access, buildability, yeah, I think, and then the other criteria,
right,
we're
yeah.
already in the initiative, and then to me, as you looked at all those, one of the issues that was going to sort of separate different sites was, what was it going to cost? You know, we ended up with the four sites. Was it four or three?
It was four.
So we had...
Let me try to remember.
Yenlo.
Maybe it was three.
Yenlo, Larson Lake, Willow.
Yeah, it was three.
I think that's it.
Yeah, that was it.
Three. Mm-hmm. So if you took... So just compare Willow to Yenlo. Yenlo is all the way on the other side of the East Sitna Valley, up on the hill, on the foothills of the Alaska Range. It's not really the foothills, it's actually an extension, you know, just above Skwentner,
mm-hmm.
the Skwentner River there. To get access to that is nearly impossible, right? I mean, you got to build bridges. And so the other thing we did is said, all right, so what do you need in this capital?
Right.
So we made that definition. You know, we're going to have an airport, we got to have rail transport, we got to have a highway, we have to have all the full set of utilities for a city, which means power, sewer and water, telecommunications, all those kinds of things. And so then that sort of started to tell you about where the sites could be, because those potential sites had to have the capability of building those kinds of infrastructures on them. So we developed that criteria, and so when we started considering the sites, and those all became part of the decision criteria, and of course the three sites we picked were three of a dozen.
Yeah.
So we looked at Healy, we looked, oh my lord, where else did we go? And we literally got in a helicopters and airplanes and flew to all these places. I mean, I was on the ground at the site in Willow. I was on the ground in Yenlo. We sort of felt like we couldn't be recommending these if we had not been there, right?
Right, that makes sense.
By the way, I wanted to say something about the commission. So the people who were on the commission was Arla Stuzhulewski,
mm-hmm.
Willie Hensley, Guy Martin, Bill Corbis, myself, a guy that was head of the Carpenters Union here at Fairbanks, Earl Cook, a realtor here in town, and Louise Kellogg,
mm-hmm.
out of the Valley. What a wonderful lady. Katie Hurley, and then who was it? I'm missing somebody. I don't remember, so I'm missing somebody, but anyway. And it was a good committee. It was really a good committee. During all of this, this issue of the 30-mile distance from Anchorage became an important issue.
Yes, I was hoping you talk about that.
And I was of the position that the boundaries of Anchorage at the time, this was actually before, I'm an architect, I have to use a piece of paper.
Feel free.
We'll
consider it part of the collection.
Here's the center of Anchorage. The Anchorage boundaries are sort of like this, which is basically Turnagain on one side and Kinnick on the other. This is Turnagain, that's Kinnick. But bounded on the north sort of by the Chugaches, right?
Mm-hmm.
While this was all going on, if you'll remember, Eagle River was trying to get they're trying to annex Eagle River.
Right, right.
And so that got to be huge. And so what I was lobbying for was that they take that municipality and find the geographic center, and 30 miles was from that geographic center. And I lost that battle. What the recommendation came from the state, actually, from Department of Natural Resources, it had to be, or maybe it was Community and Regional Affairs, it had to be the boundaries. So that is the only way in which Willow got to be considered.
Right.
So when it came to the sites we had available to us and we started voting, we could only agree on two sites.
Oh, what two sites were those?
Yenlo and Larson Lake. And I was a holdup. And I had a quorum. And Louise finally came to me and said, you know, we've got to get, I don't remember how it actually all worked, but she moved one of the people that was in my coalition over and then got Willow to be one of the candidate sites.
Why were you so opposed to Willow?
Because it didn't meet the criteria. and really what it was all about, in my mind, the whole darn issue, and the reason why, like, the Anchorage Daily News and... What's his name?
Atwood
was in favor of this. It was a big speculative move, right, on the part of all the realtors in Anchorage. And so, and as a side, that's exactly what happened. When they voted on Willow, those guys all went up and bought a ton of property up there in Willow, and that's one of the reasons why we're still trying to move the capital, is those guys still have all that money invested up there in the valley. But don't get me started. Jeez.
The whole point of this interview is to get you started.
So. Well, no, I can go on a sidetrack. It'll be another 2 hours.
Oh, well, we'll yeah. Steer clear of that then.
And let me just say one other thing. Had Larson Lake been selected as a site, I believe the capital would have been moved. Because it was halfway between Fairbanks and Anchorage. It was accessible by all of us. It had a railroad right to it.
Yeah.
It has the most absolutely incredible view of Denali. And it looked across the lake. I mean, it's a beautiful site. Absolutely beautiful. So, and back up, I've never been in favor of a capital move. That, we can put that on the record, and then people know that.
Even though you were on the commission.
Even though I was on the selection committee. Well, I wasn't the only one.
I know at the time there were accusations that the selection committee was made up entirely of people who were opposed to the capital move.
That's not true. That's absolutely not true. I mean, Earl Cook was a hard on and supporter.
Mm-hmm.
The fellow from the Carpenters Union, he was in favor of it. I would say there were a bunch of fencers. So that would include Willie, that would include Arliss. Louise was in total support of it because she's Palmer, right? So. Yeah, that's not true. Not at all. But that's interesting to hear. So we went through this process and selected these sites. And along with that, then we developed these costs. Well, so what happened is in each case, these costs were running up into the billions. And you know, it seemed like there was a threshold there at some point. So we selected these sites. They hadn't gone to election yet. I got a call. Now we're going to get into Frank. Okay. I got a call from, who the hell called me? Felix Toner. Felix called and he said, oh, no. He didn't call me. He called Mary Nordale. So Mary Nordale's a good Democrat. Felix Toner was, you know, I guess head of the party at some time. So he called Mary and said, "Mary, we got to do something about this damn capital move." And she says, "All right." But he said, "It can't be Juneau based. It's got to be statewide based." And we think that, and actually when they looked at the precinct numbers and the rest on the vote, Fairbanks was solidly against the move, or mostly solidly against the move as compared to Anchorage and South Central, right? Mm-hmm. And so they thought that there was enough support not to move the capital in Fairbanks, and that would be a good place to sort of start that effort. And so I didn't really know Mary. She was my dad's attorney. So she called me and said, "A bunch of people coming up from Juneau, we want to sit down and talk about capital." And so we all got together and had dinner, way too much to drink, and sort of talked about what would you do. And they had an idea. They said, "You need to form a committee in Fairbanks." And so this was like on a Friday night. They all got an airplane and flew away and left Mary and I to figure out what was going to happen. And so I got up and struggled into her office at about 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And she says, "Well, the first thing we need is a name." And we were playing around, and she's the one that actually came up with "Frustrated Responsible Alaskans Needing Knowledge," which then turned into Frank. But the other part of that name is the guy who actually proposed the initiative was a guy named Frank Harris that owned the laundromat or cleaning business in Anchorage. And all he was a front for Atwood, right? So it was just almost delicious that we came up with Frank, both that guy, and then the whole idea of "let's be Frank," you know, all those kinds of things. Just the whole thing just seemed to work. And then, somehow or other, I got appointed chairman of this darn thing. And so then we had to round up some money, and so this was statewide effort, so we rounded up the money to get this thing going. And we hired a consultant to advise about the best way to do this. And the consultant was a fellow by the name of Walt DeVries. And by the way, if you get that tape, Walt was there for that. He's since passed away. So it's been more than 4 or 5 years ago. Walt DeVries, you need history on Walt DeVries. Walt DeVries had been the chief of staff for Mitt Romney's dad, George, when he was governor of Michigan, a Republican. He lived in North Carolina. He lived at Wrightsville Beach. He was associated with the University of North Carolina. He had started sort of a public policy group there with the idea of actually training people to become in public service, elected office or whatever. And at the same time, because of his work with Romney, and I'm not sure where he got all of his experience, but he was also an incredibly good pollster. I mean, he knew that business. And the thing what I really remember was his whole philosophy was, "We're not doing push polls. We're not doing that kind of thing. What we're trying to do is we're really trying to find out what the sensitivity level of the public are." And so he conducted several polls And the sensitivity poll basically came back and said, what's your threshold on or what are the things that concern you most or you're most in favor of with respect to the capital move? The high point, the bright spot in all of that was the cost. And so literally the Frank Initiative developed the whole idea about costs as being the important piece. Of course, the other thing that's going on is now we're building a pipeline. It's not done yet, right? This is, what, 76? No money's flowed. But, you know, everybody's talking about the gazillion dollars. And when you start talking about cost, to the degree to which that those dollars are going in the general fund, the legislature could have just started writing checks to move the capital. And so that got to be a huge concern. And so that's when the idea came up that we would then pass a Frank Initiative that required that the voters had to vote on the cost of the move through approving a bond for that, a bonding for that cost.
Right, yeah.
So parallel, that book there had started, the Capital Planning Commission, Capital Site Planning
right,
Commission.
Right, that was in 76, yeah.
And by the way, Corbis was on that.
Yes.
I wanted to be on it, but they didn't want a planner, and they particularly didn't want me. So, which is fine. It would have consumed, I mean, what did they do? They went through three sessions, right?
Oh, it was wild, yeah. I mean, they technically were arguably in operation until 82.
Yeah.
Until the whole thing gets killed.
Yeah.
So their act, I can't even, just the raw number of pieces of paper they produced.
Yeah.
I applaud your willingness to potentially serve, sir, but I cannot imagine the...
So what's going on with that is so now we're working on a city for Willow, right?
Right.
And so as you did this, the requirement was they also had to start developing the cost. Well, as that went on, not only were we in the $1 billion, but we got up to $9 billion.
It's a
for
huge
the cost
amount
of
money.
That for that
to build the.
New capital in Willow. Mm-hmm. I think my number is 9.6 is what sticks in my brain.
I'd have to go look. I know the first bond measure, which they attempted in 78,
right,
which would have broken ground, was $966 million. That was just to break ground.
Right.
And that was right. The same year the Frank Initiative was on the ballot.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking to myself, in 1978, $966 million is
a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, so the cost of this thing just kept going up. And so with respect to the Frank Initiative, as we talked about it, this cost is going up. Mm-hmm. And it was easy to... And so the other thing that DeVries was so good on was he said, so the motto on the Frank Committee is the people's right to know and the right to vote. And so so it was our right to know what that cost was going to be, and it was our right to be able to vote on and approve that, the spending of that money. And so then during the initiative process, we continued to run polling. DeVries just kept on checking. I think he was checking his own initial poll to see if my sensitivity analysis was correct, right? And it truly was. I mean, all the way through, there was 65% against and 45% for. And it just, that never changed. It hasn't, it barely changed now.
Yeah, I don't remember what the last one was, but it was close to those numbers.
Yeah. And actually, somebody should pat all of us on the back, because if we had built a new capital, can you imagine where we would be with respect to our state budget today? We would have no money. I mean, we would really not. I mean, we don't.
We already don't have.
We don't have any money, but
it was all before the permanent fund.
Yeah.
So all of the money, the overage money, rather than going into the permanent fund, would have gone into building this new capital.
Well, I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah.
And you start looking at the numbers, it becomes troublingly clear.
So there wouldn't have been a permanent fund at all.
Well, the permanent fund didn't exist yet.
Well, that's what I mean.
Right.
There was 1 year. I can't remember what year it was. There was $5.6 billion more dollars that the state had than it needed.
Right, but so if that money
and that money would
capital,
have gone to build a capital.
Right. So
yeah.
We would never have gotten the permanent one.
I think it's unlikely. I can't prove that,
right.
But
so
it's weird to think about.
That takes us up to, was it 76? Was the first vote?
74 is the first vote. 76 is site location. 78. Is your Frank initiative.
It was the Frank initiative.
And it passes in 78.
It passed in 78. And at the same time, whatever was on the ballot to move the capital failed too,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So then the guys in Willow, Anchorage, and the rest rejuvenate the idea of moving the capital. And so we, and I'm getting a little bit beyond 78, but... what became clear was there were all sorts of ways to move the capital other than just building a new city. So the revised initiative, Frank initiative said, any costs associating, including lease costs, all those kinds of things, moving state personnel.
Right.
For a new capital, mm-hmm. or for moving the functions of the capital in Juneau, had to go before the voters.
Yeah. And that was in 90, that would have been 94
is that,
or 95.
So what would happen in 82?
82, so in 1978, the Frank initiative
passes. Oh, yeah, that's right. No, they started it up
and
again.
And then they start
right.
fighting over the phrase, I believe it was the phrase in the Frank initiative, all bondable costs.
Right.
And how can they strip that language
right.
in order to not put all of the costs onto the ballot,
right.
As I recall. Right. And then it gets very complicated at that point.
So where was it? When
and then in 1982, they put on the ballot a straight up and down.
Right.
Do we move the capital? Do we leave the capital in Juneau?
Right. And at that time, they had the new number.
Right.
And that's the time at which Hammond said, listen, you either pass this thing or you don't. And if you don't, the original initiative is no longer applicable, nor is the Frank initiative.
Right.
And so that's why...
It all wipes clean in 82.
Later, that we redid the Frank initiative.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. And then we changed the language then to... Also, then include lease costs and all kinds of crazy stuff that, but we didn't want, because at some point along the line, they talked about moving the legislature to that mall in Willow.
There were some odd proposals over the course of between 78 and 82. They were
and
many creative suggestions, let's
right.
put it that way.
Well, I don't know which, you know, realtor. Her developer owned an empty mall in Willow that needed to have that thing filled. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's the whole reason for doing this, any of it, is about the speculation, the real estate development scheme. So.
Well, so I have a question on the Frank group. Were you still on the site selection committee?
No.
Okay.
That was done.
Okay.
It was all done. I did not have a conflict of interest.
Okay. I was just wondering
right.
how you could do both.
No, I couldn't.
Okay.
I couldn't. I will say, so I end up being the front man on all this. I did all the public press releases and the rest. I'm an architect. I was not a public speaker. I'm not a politician. And so for me, it was a struggle. I had to learn how to do that. And, you know, go do a press release. So I got a written piece of paper and I've got a a spiel I want to give. But I'm not used to the press sitting across from me asking me these tough questions, right? And I survived. And of course, it got covered in the papers and and we won.
And so the Frank Initiative, was that like a citizens initiative that you guys had to get signatures?
Yeah, we had to go out and round up. We hired staff to help go round up the respective signatures. This was actually before the time in which you had to have 10% from each one of the, what is it, Senate districts? Is that how it works right now?
I don't know.
I mean, it's tough.
I feel like what I know about Alaskan politics is permanently stuck in 1970, I'm afraid.
But I do know it's hard to get initiatives on the ballot now.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was easier then?
Yeah, all you had to do was get the 10% of all the voters in the last election.
Okay.
And didn't care where they came from. Well, between Fairbanks and Anchorage, we could get those done like that. We did have a number from Anchorage we had. So we actually had a core of people in Anchorage who were absolutely in our court. I've got a really, well, unfortunately he's passed away, really good friend, John Kelsey. He Valdez, I think he was mayor of Valdez at one point. He was, they owned the fuel dock down there. He owned the fuel dock down there during the earthquake in 64.
Wow.
And then they moved all their operation over to the new town. He got involved because all Anchorage is about is greed. That was really his deal. And he became treasurer of our organization in the second round. But there were others like that. And Jimmy Christmas, I wish I could remember some of their names. I mean, some of them, to me, were a total surprise. I mean, they would have been people I would not have thought would be, you know, in our court on this. So, what else do we need?
Well, I wanted to ask, how do you think the capital move issue has impacted Alaska?
Well, I think I said earlier, I think the idea that we didn't spend that money on that is probably a blessing to the state today. We wouldn't have the permanent fund. We wouldn't be able to support that new facility. We dodged a bullet.
Why do you think it is still an issue that we're debating?
Greed. It's all about the greed. The other thing is, I think, is that let's go back and talk about politics in the day. If you recall, well, you probably don't, but so here's Alaska. And what we had is interior. We had South Central, we had Southeast, and we had rural Alaska. So this is all the rest of this, right? So what had happened, and actually my dad was in the legislature, is that there was a coalition formed between Fairbanks, interior Alaska, and the rural. And those folks were generally not in favor of concentrating that political power here. Then that allowed for an alignment with the folks in Southeast. That I wouldn't say they were part of this coalition, but they were in alignment. So what has happened? I'll draw the new diagram, which is basically South Central has become most of the politics in Alaska, and all the rest of us are sort of left out on the fringe. I mean, what's amazing is the coalition in the House, which is, you know, some Fairbanks folks, the rural guys. Actually, the rural guys are the ones that put that coalition together. And they're going to save us. So just think if the cab had been here. We wouldn't have any money.
Well, does the location of the capital affect that political power structure?
I think. Well, first off, if you put the capital here, this population would be much larger.
Okay, right, if you put it in South Central.
Yeah. There'd be these people that weren't, that were here, that were with government, would now be here, and that's both state and federal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the capital moved, it wouldn't just be moving the legislature, it would be moving all those state offices.
Oh yeah,
and
it all works.
Yeah, at the time it was estimated 6,000 jobs, roughly.
Yeah, so that would have decimated Juneau for sure.
So some of that has already happened.
Yes.
You know, like for instance, Department of Natural Resources, it's basically based in Anchorage. Revenue, DCED, Health and Social Services, most of those agencies are still based in Juneau, Department of Administration.
Mm-hmm. I would think that the folks in Juneau would have been very opposed to the capital move.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and it's still today it's still a hot topic in Juneau.
Well, they're always on edge every time I talk to them about anything, because I still have a lot of good friends down there. I lived there for a while. Well, actually, my wife was Commissioner of Health and Social Services under Knowles for 7 of the 8 years. So I was commuting back and forth to Juneau, and along the way, you know, developed some pretty good friends down there. And every time I talk to them about anything like this, they're like, don't say anything about capital move.
Oh, no, people are scared of it.
Yeah, they don't even want to mention it.
People, they still ask, it's still a question people ask gubernatorial candidates in Juneau. Right. Are you in favor of the capital move? It's interesting.
Yeah. The community has an initiative to improve the capital. Things like building parking garages, adding to the capital building so that the chambers are more appropriate, those kinds of things. And every time I talk to my friends about, you know, what's going on there and, you know, where are you going with it and what do you want to do, they're all saying, we don't want any of this to be public. We don't want to. It's amazing.
I think people are scared.
Yeah. I mean, what they're afraid of is that, I mean, it was a struggle. So they just did this beautiful rehabilitation. So that's one of my friends in Juneau, who's Wayne Jensen. He's an architect there. Great guy. By the way, I'm an architect.
Are you?
Yeah. His firm just did a rehabilitation of the Capitol building. They did a beautiful job. To get the money to move that damn thing forward, to get it through Ledge Council, was pulling teeth, and it was literally split along these same lines that have to do with moving the Capitol.
It's the same fight.
Yeah.
Well, as you asked, like, why is it still going on?
Yeah.
That's a very good question.
The question I was hoping to answer with this paper, but I think the best I'm going to do is be able to explain roughly what happened, so perhaps someone more talented than I could attempt to answer that question.
Well, I think you actually need to go to the other side. I think you need to go ask the supporters, the people who want to move capital, and say, what is this a good idea? And to some extent, they've changed a whole bunch of the stuff they would have liked to have done. You know, they've moved a couple of the agencies. And actually, the idea of moving natural resources to Anchorage, given as much of oil and gas that they do, that's where those companies are. We should be where they are, make it easier to deal with that. To some extent it's good, to the extent that you're a regulator, to the extent that you're being lobbied by them and being convinced otherwise, not to the benefit of the state, is not so good. But like moving the LIO there, that LIO could be a capital building. Or could have been, until they lost their suit.
Right, that's the Legislative Information Office.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the one, actually. So another friend of mine who's an architect actually developed that thing for them.
That big building in Midtown?
No, the one, they built a brand new building downtown near the...
It's a beautiful building.
Near the, what's the brewery?
Oh, I can see it in my head. Yeah. I cannot remember the name either.
Snow Goose? No.
Anyway.
Anyway, they built a new building in downtown.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And under a promise from LIO that they would have a lease for that building for a long-term lease. And there were those in actually the community of Anchorage said, there's something not right about this. And they took it to court, and the court said, there's something not right about this. And they made him, they killed the lease. And so then legislative information folks had to have a new place. And so they went off and bought that old bank building and have rehabilitated that. And so then the city of Anchorage, to sort of save the developer, bought that LIO building. But, so that guy's a good friend of mine. And a guy by the name of Mark Pfeffer. Mm-hmm. He and I are actually doing a project together right now. He said that suit killed forever any possibility of the state issuing an RFP to do a design, build, finance, and construct a new facility for them on a, what we call a P3, public-private development, or public-private partnership, because at any time somebody could sue and kill the lease. So, and he's right about that, but maybe that's not such the best idea anyway. I mean, basically what it ought to be is it ought to be something that's, because this is the reason why this is a problem is this is not an authorized expenditure on the part of the legislature.
Oh, that's what you're saying.
It's not a capital. I mean, let's go build a new capital. Developer, go build us a new capital and lease it back to us. Huh?
No, you're not wrong.
So, I mean, actually, I agree with the fact that they killed it. I feel sorry for Pfeffer because he sort of got left hanging out.
Yeah.
But the city helped him get recovered. I'm well astray.
No, this is all interesting.
Somebody asked me today, the mayor here, I'm going to be in Juneau on Thursday. I'm meeting with Cleck Bishop on another matter. And they were talking about some stuff that they've got Cleck working on, the city does. And I said, well, can I do anything when I talk to Cleck? And they said, sure. First thing we want you to ask him is we want him to compile over the last 15 years the amount of capital projects that come into Fairbanks as compared to the rest of the state. Because they're pretty well convinced that it's near zero. I mean, the percentage, this is, you know, not much compared to the gazillions of bucks that have been spent across the state.
So I have a question back on the site selection committee.
Oh, please.
Yeah. Bring us back around. You're talking about all the money that was spent to go review those sites and all of the committee time and a consultant and executive director. I don't know if you guys got paid as committee members.
No, we didn't. We had.
Where did all that money come from?
I don't know.
It was state money?
It was state money. Mm-hmm. No, it was all state money. And it had been allocated by the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know where our budget came from. All I know is that I had what do they call them, TOs, the travel booklets.
Mm-mm.
And, you know, it covered my hotel rooms, covered my travel, didn't cover my liquor.
But those helicopter flights to the sites and all that, that was all under that budget.
Right, exactly. And it took we took our staff and all the committee members to these sites.
I mean, and how long did that committee function?
I think it was 2 years.
That's a lot of money.
It was several million dollars, yes.
Your cost calculating that you were doing while working on that committee, can you talk a little bit more about how you guys decided what to calculate your costs? You know, like
yeah,
what,
so
what you consider to be the most important costs to kind of...
No, we didn't consider it the most important. We considered what was needed. So if you're looking at Yenlo, let's just take Yenlo because it's the most extreme case. You need to build a highway.
Right.
You need to build an airport.
Mm-hmm.
There's argument over this, but we decided you need to build a railroad. You need to build a Capitol building. You need to build housing.
Mm-hmm.
You need to build schools. You need to set up a city government. Probably needed a hospital. And you probably needed a bunch of recreation facilities. And because this is like Brasilia, you're creating a new city remotely. I mean, talk about really remotely. Just think of the logistics. This is why you need the railroad and the highway. The logistics to get the construction materials over to this site.
Then you're not even talking about the utility infrastructure.
Well, no, the utility infrastructure to support all that, which is power, sewer and water, telecom.
They called it Brasilia of the North.
Yes, it's
all over the newspapers of the era. I thought
that
it was fun that you said Brasilia, but yeah, that was an analogy that got used a lot.
Well, we didn't push that.
We let
the journalists do that.
I think you had to.
So
got taken care of.
Whose idea? There was all the state money. So whose idea was it to start investigating this?
It went with the initiative.
Was it the governor's? I mean, the initiative, the first capital move initiative?
Right.
It was a citizen initiative
that
passed.
Correct, in 74.
So then the state was required to do something.
Yeah.
Okay, and the initiative said, please figure out. The initiative didn't say we want to move the capital. It did.
That's exactly what it said.
Oh.
It covered selection of a site. Within the requirements you already mentioned, it covered that there would be a committee formed to choose a site, and that the capital would move by 1980 to the new site.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 1974.
Mm-hmm. How they thought they were going to pull all of this off in 6 years is a question that I have yet to figure out an answer to because I'm not an architect.
No.
But that seems unlikely.
But based on CB's reaction here, we can assume that it seems unlikely.
Unreasonable.
Yes.
Yeah, that date did not survive very long.
We didn't even get done with the report and selecting a site until 76. Mm-hmm. How are you going to build a city in 4 years?
Right.
There were a lot of people that I think believed at the time, as far as I could tell, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that all you needed was a building.
Right.
Yeah, in fact, actually, that's true. Really, I'm glad you brought that up. There were those who believed that select this site and build a capital building.
Mm-hmm.
Build a road and sell off the land around that and we'll do the rest of it. So speaking of greed, developer, all that kind of stuff, that was what it was all about. Of course, that was the requirement then that the state had to then give the land or somehow or another transfer that land around this Capitol building to private developers. But, you know, certainly there need to be a municipality set up of some sort. There need to be a legislative body that sort of ran that municipality.
There's some fascinating reports about all of that,
want
to get into the weeds.
It sounds like it's the vision people. Oh, just put a building there and build it, then they will come.
Right,
versus the detail people who go, oh, wait, you need A and B and C.
Right.
If you actually look at the plans for the city.
All that stuff's there.
Looks pretty idyllic, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you ought to see the ones for Willow.
Yeah,
Yeah, the ones for Willow look really nice.
Oh, yeah, Willow. Yeah. There were some sketch plans. So in order to do this, we actually did sketch plans of each of these other sites.
Oh, yeah.
And so it'd be interesting to see if those are in any of the
documents.
I don't
think they are. I'll look for them. That sounds fascinating.
Because the reason why I know this is that because for at Larson Lake, so just topographically, here's the Anuskut. No, this is Sitna River Valley. So then the hills go up like this and turn into a bench, and then the Talkeetnas are back here, right? This lake sits right in here. And so the city would sit right
that
here.
That would have been beautiful.
And here is Denali.
That would have been beautiful.
And just incredible.
And is Larson Lake close to the Parks Highway? No.
It's just above, so this is Talkeetna.
Okay.
Right down at the bottom of that slope.
Okay, so it would have been a the short access road to build.
This was as easy to build as Willow.
Right.
And in fact, I think the costs on the two were very close.
Yeah. So why was Willow then selected as the primary?
Greed.
There was a tiny difference in cost, but it was pretty minor.
Willow was closer
like
to
I say,
Anchorage.
This is the power center.
Right. Willow was closer to that.
Right.
And the people of Talkeetna were opposed.
I'll bet.
There's some pretty entertaining letters to the editor.
Were opposed to the Larson Lake?
They were opposed to, yes.
Yeah.
I find it very amusing. This is probably just my Juno sense of humor, yeah. That everyone in Mat-Su desperately wanted the capital. Everyone in Juno desperately wanted to keep the capital. And everyone in Talkeetna seems to be like, oh, don't you dare put the capital here.
Right.
Well, so these sketch plans, who drew those up?
Our consultant, CCC,
okay.
HOK.
You and didn't do it.
No.
Okay.
And then... the Capitol Planning Commission was a whole bunch of other, was a different firm, Bull Finch and somebody, out of Boston, actually.
Yeah, well, they weren't local.
No.
So that was once Willow was chosen?
Right.
Then they took over.
They did another RFP, a variety of firms submitted proposals. It was a pretty wild idea. We want you to build an entire city from scratch.
Yeah.
I mean, that's either the opportunity of a lifetime or
right.
Terrifying.
For architects,
I mean,
what do you... You gotta do it.
You know, so... We have a bunch of the proposed plans, actually, at the library.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that didn't win. There's some real interesting ones in there.
Well, you have a good question here on your...
Did I forget about
the successes and the challenges of serving on that site committee.
One of the things was interesting because we were all representative of different parts of the state, right? So I got to meet somebody like Louise Kellogg and Kathy Hurley, Bill Corbis, who continues to be one of my best friends. I'm actually going skiing with him in Juneau this weekend. He's 2 years older than I am. I just turned 80. So.
Great.
Willie Hensley, great opportunity to meet him and spend time with him, and we're still, I would say, friends. To been involved in that big of a project was really satisfying as an architect and a planner. I learned just tons. To have been involved at that level, on a political level, for something I'd never done, for me was just wonderful. I mean, I learned so much about human beings, human relationships. And I would say one of the reasons why I was able to have a successful architectural firm was because I had had all that experience in dealing with people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You asked about downsides?
Challenges, frustrations, downsides.
Well, yeah. I was lucky. I was working for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough as a planner. I don't know what kind of a deal I made with them to be gone as much as I was gone during that time. But I think they continued to pay me while I was on that commission. But so we were meeting every other week. Wow. And back in the day, so here's a story.
And no Zoom.
Some of it's relevant, some of it isn't. So Ketchikan, right? They call it the Gateway City because it's literally at the border between Canada and Alaska. To get to Anchorage for these meetings in the day, that flight in the morning went Ketchikan, Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, Juneau, Yakutat, Cordova, Anchorage. And I would get on in the morning and I would get off in Anchorage at about 5 in the afternoon.
You got stuck on the milk run,
milk
sir.
Run.
I mean, they were, the milk run, that was it.
There wasn't the option to fly to Seattle or to fly up.
Well, there was. And so then what I did is I went to the commission, I went to the executive director, and I says, you know, it would be a hell of a lot cheaper for you guys to send me, because I was getting per diem, send me to Anchor to Seattle. I'll overnight in Seattle and I'll be here a day ahead of the other schedule. And he said, sure. So I got real familiar with doing that. And so anytime when I go to Ketchikan anymore, well, I shouldn't say that. Not always. Once in a while, I'll just go to Seattle and fly back.
Right.
Because I can catch a direct out of Fairbanks to Seattle and then the direct back to Ketchikan.
So that being, doing all that travel was challenging.
That was challenging, yeah. And then, I'm trying to think the timing here. I was going to say how it might have affected my work, but I hadn't started my business yet. I did start my business actually in Ketchikan, but that wasn't until 76. So this was over before that happened. I would have guessed that maybe somebody at the planning department might have been very happy.
Were there other challenges of, with the other people on the committee? You know, you didn't probably always agree on things, did you?
No, so, I mean, the only, not so much. I mean, Louise was, in my mind, the only real problem. I mean, she's a very wonderful human being. But she was such an advocate, you know, it was at times tough. But, you know, she was also, I mean, she was a flag bearer for the Valley, which you had to admire. I mean, and so she was actually a farmer. So, I mean, she liked the whole idea about the agricultural aspects of it. Have you guys read those books by McIntosh about Mentzu Valley during the time of when they moved
the colony
out there?
No, I haven't.
Familiar with that history.
I'm familiar with the history, but I haven't read them.
They're good books, and of course they got great art in them too. It was he and his wife wrote those books. But whenever I think about the Valley and farming and Lois, I have to think about those. That history that he had written, but no, I don't think there was a lot of conflict. I'm trying to think who the heck. There had to have been somebody on the commission that was an Anchorage person, but I can't think of who that was. I mean, well, who it was actually Arliss.
Yeah, Arliss.
And Arliss is a planner. I mean, she made her name in politics being chairman of the Planning Commission in Anchorage at the time in which they were actually talking about annexing Eagle River. Was she ever mayor?
No,
I don't think so.
You're talking about another great human being.
My Anchorage history is not very strong.
She was in the legislature, and was she on the Federal State Land Use Planning Commission?
I don't know. That's another thing that's going on.
Oh,
land claims.
Right. And ANCSA and ANILCA are also wrapped up in all this.
Yes. How complicated do you want to make this?
So, would you like to say more about how those things are connected to this capital move?
I think that what people thought, I mean, just think of this, oil, land claims, D2, so what came out of land claims was D2, right? Mm-hmm. So D2, ANILCA, all that stuff happening at the same time. I think the populace of the state of Alaska was a hell of a lot more aware of what was going on and how it was going to affect them on almost every level. I mean, particularly when you talk about ANILCA, I mean, people got just really cranked up about that. They didn't get so cranked up about native land claims because that was sort of a done deal. They weren't going to be able to get around that. I don't think they realized the degree to which it was going to be a benefit to the state of Alaska. But I mean, it was great times.
So did land claims and ANILCA play into decisions about site locations?
No, because we had to be on state land.
You had to be on state land. Yeah. Okay. And state lands were already selected.
The state had already selected their lands. Yeah, that was one good thing. I mean,
although they had to give some back for the land claims, but
yeah,
there was some conflicts there.
Yeah.
But okay.
I mean, absent what the state had done with respect to its elections, we wouldn't have Prudhoe.
Right.
There's a thought, another thought. It's probably not going to come back.
Okay. Well, we were talking about the successes and challenges of the site selection committee. What about the Frank Initiative? In that group.
It's a pretty small group, which is good. It was myself, Mary, Carolyn Bushy here in Fairbanks. Her husband owned the Union Oil distributorship here. Who else? God, I can't remember this guy's name in Anchorage. He had been a commissioner of labor or something like that. Anyway.
It wasn't Walt Parker, no, he wasn't a commissioner.
No, it wasn't. And he's the guy I was so surprised got on board. I'm going to call Corvus, he'll remember. And I'll get it to you, get you the name.
Perfect. But, so even though you guys were all a team, it still certainly must have been challenging to get that initiative developed and passed.
Well, yeah, it was. We had a bunch of attorneys that were working. Mary was an attorney to develop and draft the initiative and get it all set up. And of course, you had to have the initiative drafted before you could actually go and submit it to the division elections. God, I'll never forget. There was a press release. What do they call it? Press contact or whatever they call it, opportunity. We delivered a van load of boxes with petitions in them. And we exceeded the number of signatures we needed. And we did that on purpose because we didn't, you know, they'll throw some out. So we exceeded, I think, by like 20% the number that were required, the 35,000 that were required. But yeah, no, we went to the division elections and hauled in all these boxes with big grins on our face, and you know, they brought the press in with the cameras and all that kind of stuff, and here we go.
And was it difficult to get it through division elections and to get it passed?
Not that I recall. Not that I recall. It was pretty well tailored before it got that far. I mean, you know, the process is you develop something, you go down to you have to basically go to the Department of Law and say, here's what we're thinking. We need to have this vetted. Take a look at it. Let us know what where the problems are. How do we fix this? And so those folks were helpful.
And was it pretty easy to, I don't remember what the numbers were for it getting passed, but.
It was 38,000.
That signed it or that passed, I mean, getting those initial signatures,
I think
that was pretty easy?
No, I mean, it took us a year. I mean, maybe not a year. I remember the campaign started like in the spring, March, and actually we set an office up here in, downstairs, right down there, and hired a staff person to sort of manage this. She was actually a grad student at the university here in Fairbanks, and she managed it. And we.
Do you remember her name?
Hell no.
I don't think so. I thought of that.
Yeah, like I said, this was 50 years ago.
Right. But then it passed, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, here's Rachel's question. How do you think that initiative impacted the Capitol move? Maybe you already said that.
Well, it's actually stopped it, not slowed it up. But, you know, in my mind, that was only the agent. The people of Alaska stopped it. They said, this is not a good idea. They didn't need much convincing. That's the reason why this worked, was because we did the sensitivity polling early to know that there was a threshold of how much money you want to spend. And I would say that same idea still prevails today. That's why we've got the problems we've got. I mean, I'm going to talk political, but in my mind, there's only two things our government is good for. Giving us a check. No, there's only one. Giving us a check. The rest of it we don't care about.
Right.
We don't want to be spending any of our money. Which, by the way, isn't their money because they don't pay any damn taxes.
Right.
Like I said, don't get me going.
No, this is great. But it's interesting that, you know, in 74 the initiative was, yes, let's move the Capitol, and by when was the Frank Initiative?
78.
Mm-hmm.
4 years. It had flipped.
Yeah.
Well, and what's also interesting, if you look at the polling numbers, Fairbanks is what flipped. So in 60, there's an initiative to move the Capitol. In 1962, there's an initiative to move the Capitol. Both of them fail. None of the places, they're pretty stable in terms of the polling numbers. 74, Fairbanks is what flips. Fairbanks goes 1% in favor of moving it.
Really?
And that changes the outcome in 74. It's absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, well, you had said, you know, it started, this idea of moving the Capitol started way before, you got in 74.
Well, back before 55.
Yeah.
Before the Constitutional Convention.
They try to move it in 59. But the Alaska Supreme Court says no, because it's in the Constitution of the state of Alaska that the Capitol is in June.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Shows I have not read the Constitution.
It's, you know, how much time do you spend reading the Constitution of Alaska?
Right.
Well, it's in a little book. It's about this big. And it's only about that big. So that's the other thing my wife did, is she was the University of Alaska. And she's an amateur historian, and she decided that at the anniversary of the 55th to do a big celebration and focus on UAF at the same time. And you know, built that history. And actually, there's a
they did that film.
The film, actually, which was an Emmy Award piece. So all that's in there.
Oh yeah, it's all interesting. The minutes, we have the whole transcription
right.
of the Constitutional
right.
Convention, and there's a real debate over the Capitol
yeah.
issue in
yeah.
there. Interesting. Which I've not dived too deeply into yet.
Well, we were talking too about the challenges on the site selection committee and all that time it took and the travel. Was the Frank Initiative your role with that? Did that take over your life?
During the Frank Initiative?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. One other thing I was going to say is with respect to CCCHOK, they did an incredibly good job. And of course, I knew Ed Crittenden before that, but he became a pretty good friend during that time. And I'm trying to remember the guy they had that was a project manager for that. But he was also, he's an architect, planner type guy. He actually became Knowles facilities director when Knowles was mayor in Anchorage. That name will pop in my brain here pretty quick. But he also became a pretty good friend. And come to find out, the crazy part of that was that his wife was a good friend of my wife's before I met her. So.
It's a small state.
Alaska it is a giant small town.
I love it. And, you know, I tell people from Lower 48 that Alaska is a small city. And it's amazing, even as scattered out as we are, how many people in the state we know from all over. Mm-hmm. You know, I know I have good friends in Kotzebue. I've got a couple good friends in Nome. Well, actually, lots of good friends in Nome. Barrow. All up and down the Yukon, yep. Anchorage.
Well, and people also, it's a small population and we're somewhat mobile.
Right.
You know, nowadays, you know, traditionally not so much, but.
Well, and then, you know, really with respect to our business, which is statewide, you know, so we travel a lot, so we get to, you know, meet all these people from all over.
Well, it sounds like your work, in those early days with the site selection committee, and you know, you got to meet a lot of people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and so that was the other thing. Check this, but I think we went out and held public hearings.
You did.
And so we went to Bethel, and we went to Nome, and we went to, you know.
Yep, there were public hearings.
Yeah.
There were many.
That was for the site selection.
For site selection.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were public hearings, and there were... At one point, there was a rumor going around that the site selection committee had decided that Fairbanks was uninhabitable. But I've not been able to find that in any reports.
Yeah, right.
Though when it's 30 below here, I'm not sure I disagree with the site selection committee.
Do you remember? Do you recall this?
Which, no, none of that. No.
And then, so this other one that you have this report for.
Right. This is the New Capitol Site Planning Commission.
That was separate.
That forms after the site selection happens.
Oh, okay.
Right. So once people have picked a site, you then have the next step, which is you have to plan a city.
Right, and that's where CB was no longer involved.
Right.
Yes, you managed to escape that one.
Well, you know, in fact, if I had been, I wouldn't have been Frank.
Right.
So I think I did a better job. you know, what I think would be really good, you raised an interesting point that I had never thought about. I think a very important thing to do would be to tally in today's dollars all the money that's been spent on a capital on the state side.
On the state side.
I wouldn't try to tally all the money that the Frank Initiative spent in, you know, three cycles or, you know, how much the other guy spent
but
in their cycles.
But how much state money has gone into planning?
Right.
I can't even imagine.
And then you'd need an economist to figure out the, you know, 1974 dollars.
Right, now you have to bring them up to today's dollars.
Yeah.
It would be shocking to people.
Yeah.
What a waste of money.
Yep. Well, we could do that on a lot of state projects.
I was about to say, I don't think the capital move wins.
It might.
Well, but you might look at the grain terminal in Valdez.
yeah.
How about the railroad that goes out to nowhere through the Matsu Valley or to Point Thompson? Is that what it's called, Point Thompson?
That one I'm not as familiar with. I don't know.
They went out to the dairy out there?
Well, so...
No, Port McKenzie, that's...
Port McKenzie, that's where they...
Yeah.
Port Thompson's up north.
Yeah, that's right.
It'd be very odd to put a railroad to Port Thompson.
I
don't know if I'd recommend it.
So
I'd rather have a railroad to Kinross, to Manco.
Manco, yeah. So have we covered everything, Rachel?
We've gotten a lot.
You sort of hinted at what you're most proud of. But
yeah.
And most challenging and what you're most proud of. Those
yeah.
are good questions.
Are you proud? I mean, what are you most proud of in terms of your work on the Frank Initiative?
I think sort of the idea of setting the framework about how you would go about evaluating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to take full responsibility for that because the consultants are also were there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was totally into that and totally supported. I mean, I probably initiated a lot of that, and having come from a planning background, I'm happy we did that. Because it's fun. It's what I do. I mean, I'm doing it today.
Right.
I mean, on multiple projects.
Well, were you happy to have been involved in that site selection?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I know what I was going to say. So one of the things that came out of having been on that and having had Hammond and his staff thought that I had performed well in 76 or 78, I can't remember which, Hammond appointed me to the Local Boundary Commission. And so then I spent 10 years on the Local Boundary Commission. Which you talk about another fantastic set of experiences in learning about the state of Alaska. It was really, really, really enjoyable. Going to a hearing in Andriovsky, St. Mary's, out on the Lower Yukon, where the hearing was conducted in Yupik, was pretty incredible.
Yeah, I didn't realize that the Boundary Commission still existed in the 70s.
No, the Boundary Commission was in the state constitution.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
And but what did the Boundary Commission have to do with the Lower Yukon? That's way far from our Canadian boundary.
No, it's not about the international boundary. It's about the boundaries of municipalities.
Oh.
Borough cities.
Oh, okay.
So anytime you want to do an annexation, any of those kinds of things. I mean,
okay.
One of the more interesting ones we ever did was up in Kotzebue, and in Kotzebue was Northwest Arctic Borough,
mm-hmm.
is the Kotzebue region, and Nana, and the borough and Nana, then the regional corporation, lands. The Nana lands extended north up towards Point Hope and included all the land around Red Dog.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Red, that is, Red Dog is actually Nana property. Unfortunately, the borough boundaries for the North Slope included that property.
Right.
And so we were asked by Northwest Arctic Borough to detach that piece of property from Arctic Slope, or not Arctic Slope,
North Slope.
North Slope Borough, and put it in Northwest Arctic Borough, and that was part of their petition. And that was a tough, I mean, it was an absolutely reasonable thing to do, but boy, you talk about hard feelings and really tough. It was
yeah.
a tough deal.
Yeah. Interesting. It is. It's interesting how one thing on the site selection committee led to all these other.
Right.
And I have to say, the work you guys did on the site selection committee was incredibly detailed.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine having taken
yeah.
on.
Right.
The. Mm-hmm. Just wow, like it's incredible.
Well,
really incredible.
Well, just start. I don't remember this guy's name. just start with the idea that it could be on 100 square miles of estate land. So the first thing you have to do is identify where those lands are. I remember that map.
I think I've seen that map.
And so it actually extended. So we basically focused on, in the report at the end, we literally looked at the whole state. I mean, we felt it was incumbent upon us to look at the whole state, which meant we looked over in the Copper River region, the whole area up around Paxson and Summit Lake and all that, and south towards Valdez. And then you had to have criteria for why you would eliminate any of those potential sites. And then that drove us into sort of focus on that region, essentially south of the Tanana River to Cook Inlet, and west, not over the mountains, the inland hills. Because the minute you jumped over there, you're out there in the Kuskokwim drainages, and that's just, thinking about being out there. And so the other thing we talked about was climate. What is the climate like? So you get out in the Delta, it's like going to June. Except worse.
That's to say, it doesn't solve the ease of access problem.
Right. So, I mean, one really nice site that got rejected that I liked was actually a site around Healy, up on the hills, which actually had a wonderful sort of southeastern exposure, sort of where the park stuff is. It's actually up high, up on the plateau,
right,
north of the range. Mm-hmm. So you had the view of the range, beautiful. You had the view of the Tanana River Valley. I mean, it was really incredible. But, there just wasn't, Cook and I were in favor of it.
I was going to say, do you remember why it was eliminated?
Yeah, it just wasn't close enough to Anchorage. I mean, that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. What else is in this?
I'm looking at Rachel.
I feel like we've covered a lot of these in passing.
Right. Just want to make sure we've got all your questions, Rachel, for your interests. I've been interjecting a lot.
No, it's been good. I've been staring at stuff about, I've been doing nothing but reading articles about this topic for 2 years now, so I forget what other people who might listen to this recording don't already know, because...
Yeah, that's kind of what I think.
Do you happen to recall when you first heard about the idea of moving the capital? I mean, because you're an Alaskan born, so do you happen to remember sort of the first time it ever
sort
hit your
in
radar
the background,
screen?
It seemed like it was always up. And I will say my dad was probably an advocate. Bob Bettesworth, he was a legislator. He was a borough assemblyman, active in the Republican Party. So probably through them. Of course, I was young. So I was born in 43. So I was, what, 33?
Yeah.
Something like that. I was still very early in my career. Andy Warwick is a good friend, high school friend. He ran for the legislature, and I was one of his sponsors, or advocates, supporters. Do you remember a guy by the name of Larry Holmstrom? Larry was another good friend and a good friend of Andy's, and actually he and I really worked that campaign where Andy got elected. Andy got first elected as a Democrat. It was only after he was in the legislature he changed over to being a Republican. But he was, what changed him was he was chair of the Finance Committee in the House. and looking at the budget, he's an accountant. So you look at the budget, and that'll change your mind. and he's still a good friend. And it was sort of that association. So Holmstrom was really active, and so that's where the appointment came from. Holmstrom was really active in Hammond's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, that's how Larry died, was he was on that float trip down the Copper with Hammond doing videos.
Yeah.
When they fell out of the raft, he and his daughter.
Yeah.
So Bill Gordon, who was chief of staff, he was a good friend. He lives here in Fairbanks still a friend. And Holmstrom were the primary contacts that I had. I got to meet Scott Foster, who was the communications director under Hammond.
Yeah, I've seen that name.
Yeah, so there was a good question. Would you get involved in another statewide issue or initiative like this?
Yes. Absolutely.
It didn't sour you on the process.
Not at all. I'm sort of standing by for something to come up that's going to deal with the Berman Fund dividend. I don't know what it is, but mm-hmm.
Seems like
be.
The next big one.
Yeah. Yep. What I thought was a very good piece it was a letter to the editor, maybe an editorial in the Daily News last week, where they literally laid out that if you didn't spend the $2.7 billion on the permanent fund dividend, we'd have a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't that argument been made before?
It probably has. Nobody's making it strong enough.
Yeah. Or nobody is listening. Nobody cares.
Right. Right.
It is a very, I think, hard thing for people to separate the dividend from the fund. That's the next project I'd love to take on. But for now, I'm going to finish this one first. Because I find the history of the permanent fund.
Yeah.
Thanks to doing this work, I've become completely fascinated
yeah.
with the history of the permanent fund. But I think Ross will get annoyed with me if I don't at least send him something about this before.
Right.
Who's that?
Ross Cohen's the editor of
right.
Alaska
okay.
History Journal, who
okay.
who has been very patient with me as I work
okay.
through what I thought was a very simple issue. Mistakes were made.
Yeah, well, it is. It's simple.
Yeah.
Just move the capital.
Right. Yeah, it's no problem.
And it's also, you know, someone like you is so involved in all the details of it. There was a lot of detail. It wasn't just.
It wasn't
so
simple.
Simple.
Right. Right. Well, I mean.
And a lot of politics.
To go to Rachel's point, the idea of where that gone. That all you needed to do
is
was
put, a
put in a building.
Yeah.
That's not the drawing. Maybe it is. And you had a capital. Is was silly. I mean, it had no thinking.
Right.
And yeah. You wonder. Yeah. I mean, and I was my brain was heading down a track. Was you wonder to the extent to which something like the capital move was a catalyst for the kind of dysfunction we find in the state today?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, given the political makeup of the people who live in the valley and South Central, as compared to the rest of the state, I did run across a statistic that really surprised me. Was in the last election, Fairbanks did not come into the win column for Murkowski.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
I was blown away.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too.
I did not know that, but
yeah.
And I am surprised now that I found
yeah.
out.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Lisa's a really good friend of ours.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say that that capital move and all those, the details, I mean, just, you must have been in the middle of lots of politics. I mean, not just those making those decisions, but was there political pressure on you guys in the committee?
I didn't feel any. There could have been some. I bet you Arliss really took it. And Louise. I didn't. But I do know that, you know, we'd come up for a 3-day meeting and go to breakfast in the morning, and, you know, there'd be 2 or 3 of us on the commission having breakfast. And everybody's got their daily news out and they're reading all the papers. And, you know, half of what the conversation was about was who's running for governor. And Hammond was only, you know, it's sort of like today, you know, he was only into his second year, maybe the beginning of the third year of his term.
Right.
It was nuts. So.
And then did you guys read the articles about the move? And because you said there's a lot of newspaper coverage.
Yeah.
Yes.
Every newspaper. I will say that sort of the advocacy I got into there has, so the mantra behind this company is we're community builders.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we do is we go out and look for those things that are necessary to make our community better. And I could go into a long story about that, but so I become an advocate for some of these institutions, most of them nonprofits. But one of the things I got involved in was getting the Polaris Building torn down. So I was a chairman the current mayor was chairman, but I was the one that did all the work for getting that thing to happen. And I'm still completely involved in making sure that happens. So. And it's those kinds of things that, you know, once you start on something like this, you know, the process.
People know your name and they recruit you, right?
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've not been actively involved in any other political, even candidate support. Since I've done things like be the treasurer for the Junior Olympics, for the Junior Olympics, but then also if you remember, we had the World Cup here 1 year, so I got involved in helping get that organized. So it's been things like that I have no problem being involved in.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think I have all my questions answered.
Anything else from
you? Anything else that you would like to add?
I think it's great doing this. And I'm looking forward to your tally.
I don't know that I'm going to successfully get that tally done, but I appreciate your... It's a good... The question of how much it was going to cost and the question of who was going to pay for it and the question of how you even begin to calculate those costs is both fascinating, complicated, and really interesting to me.
So one of the things you might do, I mean, this is, I actually think this is worthwhile. Go check out at the point at which we decided we weren't gonna have a state income tax.
Talk about getting into the weeds there.
Yeah.
That's a huge...
Yeah, that's another one.
I mean, we used to pay $10 a person to pay for schools.
Right.
We don't even do that anymore.
Well, and the fact that they didn't just suspend the income tax, they actually took it off the books, was a mistake.
In
of our perspectives.
Absolutely. My dad was in the legislature when that happened, and he told me before he passed away that was the worst thing he ever did.
I've heard that from more than one person. Hammond said that it was one of his biggest regrets in his memoir, that he did not veto the repeal of the income tax. I have heard from multiple people.
We have no stake in our government.
Yeah. Well, and what's also very interesting, this was pointed out to me by a colleague of mine, who's in the environmental, who's an environmental historian, is that there's a perception in Alaska that all of our economic movement happens through the Mat-Su, through Anchorage.
Right.
But if you actually look at the dunders in the budget, right, all of the state's money comes out of the North Slope.
Yep.
And so isn't it interesting that all of our state spending ends up in the Mat-Su?
Yeah.
So much of it does. But all of our state revenue is coming out of the North Slope.
Yeah.
Which is why the people on the North Slope...
our favorite Willow.
...have their particular views.
Indeed.
So I think we shall turn off.
I think we've gotten off topic enough that we probably should turn off our recording.
We